These are stories of women, mothers, and enterprises filled with grit, gumption, and overcoming. Where in the midst of adversity, we see her rise up. She makes a choice. She chooses to emerge. I'm your host, Becca Erickson. Hey, and welcome to this week's episode of the To Emerge podcast. I am joined with Danielle Cotter by my side, and she is an LMFT, which is a licensed marriage and family therapist here in the Twin Cities. Also a mama, soon to be mama to two.
Yes.
She is heavily with child by me.
I am.
Very and it's going to be a boy. Child. So girl boy. Boy.
Girl boy.
Mm-hmm. I have girl boy boy.
Mm-hmm.
So soon the tides will turn. On they all will. Things girl.
It'll be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Danielle is also the co-director of outreach for PPSM. So that is actually kind of how we met. That's Pregnancy Postpartum Support Minnesota. Doing a lot of similar work with Emerge Mothers Academy and her work at Ellie Family Services as an LMFT and then her work as outreach at PPSM. So basically this woman has so many brilliant, wonderful, compassionate, and assertive things to say towards moms and postpartum and empowered motherhood. So that's why you're here, because you're a gift and you're amazing.
Thanks.
So welcome.
Thank you. Happy
so
to be here.
Will you kick us off talking about your own first pregnancy, delivery, and postpartum story, and then we'll get into your professional life?
Yeah. Let's see. So my husband and I decided that we were going to have babies in 5 years, and 3 weeks later we found out we were pregnant. So that's how that started. I remember taking the pregnancy test and looking at it and thinking I had the flu, because I just could not believe that I was actually pregnant. And so there was just a huge mixture of really big excitement, but also super intense fear. Hmm. And I was in the middle of graduate school, and there was just a lot happening in our lives. We'd only been married for a year and a half, just was not in the quote-unquote plan. So lots of loss of control, which is fun for someone with anxiety. And so that was scary but exciting, and I had never really felt or was aware of such dualistic emotions at the same time. And that really, I think, highlighted my entire pregnancy, that there was just a constant, I'm really happy and really scared, really happy and really scared, and not knowing how to handle those feelings really at all.
Right. All of motherhood.
All of motherhood.
Dual emotions.
Yes.
All of motherhood.
Yes. So I did the societal, the appropriate thing by society, which was to put a smile on my face and be happy, even though all of this stuff was happening underneath the surface. And then we had some complications during her pregnancy. Just kind of minor things, but all of them kind of added up and compounded. And I ended up, my water broke at 34 weeks, which I am 34 weeks in one day today. So it's a little bit of an emotional week for me right now.
Sure.
So she came, about 6 weeks early.
So she was pretty small.
She was actually a good size. She was 5 pounds, 3 ounces and very healthy.
Yeah.
For
not
being
bad.
Early.
Yeah.
But she, took about 2 days to come out.
Sounds lovely.
Yep. And I was, before I was pregnant and in graduate school, I was a doula for 5 years. I've been involved in the birth world since I was 22. So I had a very crystal clear idea of how I wanted this birth to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my doula, I had my husband, I had my midwife team, I had, you know, these grand plans for her exit. And as birth often goes, plans for grand exit changed.
Mm-hmm. Birth plans.
Birth
it's
plans.
An oxymoron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There is no plan. Your body is the plan, and your baby is the plan, and your mind has nothing to do with it as much as you want it to have something to do with it. So there was kind of a cascade of issues. But I did end up catching her, which is what I really wanted as an, I guess, quote unquote, end goal. So that was a really beautiful moment, and I'm very glad that I had that. But leading up to that was very, it just went in lots of different directions that I wasn't fully expecting.
So tub birth then?
Nope. She was a land birth. was born on surf land. Turf. She was a little surf and turf. I spent a lot of time in the tub.
So somehow you're flexible enough that you could catch. I mean, I don't think that my belly or cankles would have ever allowed me the opportunity to catch one of my children. So
it was it was pretty epic. I had like three people trying to make that happen because for some reason I was just very attached to that.
Though your body had no energy left after 2 days of laboring.
It really
they all propped you forward.
It really didn't. But tell you, adrenaline really, really helps you out in those cases. Where you're just, I was excited to be at the end of it all and to meet her. So I got to, I mean, she roared as loud as she possibly could the moment she came out and announced her presence very adequately.
That doesn't really surprise me.
She's kind of a force. And she's still that way. She announces her presence and she goes up to anyone and everyone and introduces herself and says, "Hi, I'm Daisy."
This is why we love Daisy.
And this is why we love her. And she was no different during her birth. So then we had an 8-day NICU stay, which if it wasn't for the nurses and the pediatricians and the staff at Methodist where we did give birth, I think that would have been a really, really hard experience.
Sure.
But we were very supportive. So it was in the NICU that I started to experience my own intrusive thoughts. And that was terrifying because I had no idea what was entering my mind. And really didn't have an idea of what that was. And so immediately I connected it to there's something wrong with me as a mom. That I'm deficient in some way and that I'm unfit. I don't know who decided that I could have this job, but someone did, and I don't know why, because now I'm thinking all of these really awful things.
And were they mostly towards yourself in your own capacity, or were they towards her?
Both.
And your bonding?
Okay. Both. It was toward pretty much anything. And it was less, I guess it was less thoughts and it was more images, which is knowing my own imaginative mind, I can see why that would happen. But I really had no idea what was going on, so I just tried my best to ignore it. And again, wear the smile on my face, and everybody was telling me, isn't this the best thing in your life? This is the best moment. This is so great. And I was like, yeah, it's right. Awesome.
Well, and for you, it's a compounding of you had a long labor. You have already experienced kind of a surprise trauma pregnancy out of your plan and being a planner and kind of a, you know, whatever, control freak, self-professed.
recovering.
Thank you. Then you have brain chemistry happening that you can't control. Then there's NICU stay.
Yep.
Then your breasts are getting engorged.
Yep.
I mean, fantastic time of life.
It was wonderful. I was so happy. Not really.
Right. But you somehow felt forced.
Yes.
To put on the face.
Yes, I felt forced to put on the face.
Because you weren't sure who to say.
Oh.
I have crazy images of what I'm going to do to my child.
Yep.
Because you're like, CPS will come and take my child away.
CPS will come, or people will know that I just like this feeling of like I'm a fraud. Like I know that I carried this baby and I nurtured this baby and I grew this baby and I'm continuing to nourish her life, but I'm not a mother. Like there wasn't this connection with I'm a mother like I thought there was going to be. There was a connection with her where I felt like I love you. And I know that you're the greatest thing, but I don't feel connected to this identity that I've just been slapped with called mother.
Motherhood, right? What a transition.
Super, yeah. Super huge. And so that was just, I think there was, it was really just the start of just like a deconstruction of identity, of like what I thought I knew, what I thought I was, everything I thought I had resolved in life. No, not just kidding. Jokes on Danielle. So that was kind of the start of my own postpartum journey. But again, I ignored it, and I think I faked it really well. So there were definitely days that I felt good and I had energy. Like I remember her first week at home, and I reorganized the bookshelf downstairs and reorganized the office downstairs.
Post-nesting.
Yeah, I was, because that really makes sense while she was napping.
Well, it makes sense when you're wired through anxiety and control.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
Yep. Yep. And so I noticed, like, oh, my house needs to be really clean. Like, whatever people were going to see, I needed to make look good.
Yeah, that's what you could control.
That's what I could control. Mm-hmm. So, like, my living room was dusted. My floors were always well kept. it's so funny to look back on it. I slept, but not great, of course. I did have a baby that did sleep fairly well, which I was very grateful for. And at the same time, I couldn't really sleep because I needed to get these other things done. I never napped when the baby napped. I was always getting something done, getting a project done.
Yeah, I hear you.
Writing something for graduate school, whatever. Doing something and not resting at all. So the intrusive thoughts continued. The anxiety continued.
So you go to your OBGYN at 6 weeks, and you have to fill your screening, and you faked your screening.
I lied. I was screened 3 times postpartum.
And you just knew to answer that you were not experiencing any weight change, and you were not experiencing any crazy.
I
out of fear of what?
I was so afraid of being judged. I still am. I was so afraid of someone finding out that I wasn't a mom, but I was a mom. And it was just this, I wanted to hide the fact that I didn't know what my identity was, and I didn't want anybody to find that out before I was able to figure that out for myself.
Yeah.
That was really terrifying. And I also didn't know what was happening in my mind. I had absolutely no name for what I was experiencing.
Right.
And what was on the form didn't jive with what my experience was.
Oh, right. And it didn't help explain anything.
No.
It just was zero, from a 0 to a 10.
Yes.
Are you,
Yes.
Right.
And are you experiencing anxiety? Well, I'm like, well, I guess, but I'm like, does it count that my stomach is doing flip-flops all day? Like, is that what? And I'm in graduate school to be a therapist, mind you, during this entire time.
Yes.
Okay, so it was like I couldn't, what was happening inside of me and what was happening outside of me were like two different worlds, and I couldn't gel them together. I couldn't make sense of what was happening with me and then what happens with everybody else. Like,
right.
That doesn't make sense to me.
First of all, fascinating enough that human cognition and the human psyche can almost be that dichotomous to function as graduate student and non-imposter, who also must then go home and explore being an imposter and deciding that motherhood might fit somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how yet.
Yep. I remember being home and having thoughts of, like, what if I just moved? Like, what if I just left right now?
With Daisy or without?
No. What if I just left?
Like, interesting. Yep.
What would happen? And wouldn't fantasize about it, but I would think about that. Like, what would happen? And it was so distressing that I could ever think about that, yet it was something that I thought about constantly for months because I just wanted to escape my insides.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I thought running away would solve that problem, but I take my insides with me.
Well, and then you analyze your own cognition. Yeah. So then you have like a meta level of cognition over your thoughts. And you think, well, wait a second. Now shame's going to creep in because I should not have had that.
Oh, yes. I should not.
That there was thought. But then, so then what does shame do to the whole motherhood experience?
Well, that I'm still
let her love you? Could you love her?
Yes. Those things were intact. I loved her. I love her. I mean, to the point where it's like painful love, right? Like it's so like, I love you so much. It hurts. Like I never understood that until I had a child. And then it hurt to love her because it was so intense and so primitive and so like instinctual, yet I didn't feel like the person that's supposed to love someone like your child that much because I couldn't identify with being a mom or hone into that identity at all. So the shame crept in of much more around what kind of mom, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
I'm a bad mom because fill in the blank. So it was a lot more centered around myself versus her. And then just the guilt of like, she doesn't deserve a mom like this. The shame of like a bad, and just so many.
Which is so sad because you're such a good mom.
I try. And it, but I hide it with her too, you know? And like, that was the other thing that I felt was like, she can see it. She can see that I'm fake. She can see that I'm not real, even though I know I'm her mother.
Mm-hmm.
But she can see it. She can sense it. And that was another part of just the thought process that was so twisted was like, she's a baby, you know, she needs to, you know, be held and she needs to be changed and she needs to be fed and she needs to have her basic needs met. And I need to engage with her, but she doesn't know the level of significance that's going on inside of me right now. She just knows whether or not she's hungry and whether or not I'm feeding her.
Mm-hmm.
But I really thought of like, she knows. Like, she knows that like, I'm a fraud. She just knows that I'm not supposed to be who I am. And that was just very scary that I just could not connect with her in that way.
Did things switch at some point? Or did you use, you know, graduate school tools to ground yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Did someone speak into your life? Mm-hmm. Did it just wear off?
When I started experiencing, it was 6 months and I didn't say a word to anybody about what I was experiencing. It was a long, long time. And finally, I was at the kitchen table one night after I put her to bed and my thoughts had started to turn to myself and they were starting to become more thoughts around my daughter were always like, I would never, ever, 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 ever do anything that's coming into my mind. So I always knew that. But then the thought started to turn on me.
Yeah.
And I started to question whether or not I would actually do something like that.
Hmm.
And that scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. Like suicidal ideation type stuff.
Mm-hmm. I started thinking about what it would be like if I wasn't here. I started having the voices of like, you should just leave. It was just like this very punishment oriented way of thinking. And so I my husband sat down and asked me how I was doing. I mean, just kind of like on a, you know, what you do at your on your daily, how are you doing today?
Right.
And I was like, well, let me tell you. And, I mean, poor guy.
He just wanted to know what you had for lunch.
Yeah. I mean, really, that's what he wanted to know. And he got a platter of stuff that I don't know if he was ready to hear. I don't know if he knew. I don't know if he had a sense of what was going on. I don't know. But he listened, and I said, I think therapy would be a wise choice.
And he was did he support that?
Agreed. Yeah, yep, okay. He totally agreed. And that was a whole nother experience that I probably don't have time for today for. But
like good or bad?
It was awful.
Okay.
It was awful.
Oof.
So then I started to be more honest with him and started showing up how I was actually feeling and starting to tell people, like, I actually am a mess right now. Like, because people kept telling me, like, oh, you look so great and you're so happy and you're glowing and you're this and you're that. And there's these, like, positive things. And I was like, oh, well, I'm actually a mess. And here's why I'm a mess. And here's what's happening. And I also read about intrusive thoughts at that time. And so I finally had a label to what I was experiencing. And that was a big game changer because I was like, oh, other people have this enough to where they have a label for it. And they described what it was. And I was like, oh, yep, that's totally happening.
Right.
So
some of the relief came in having it named.
Having it
and
named,
having it out there.
Having it out there.
Because, right, once you tell one person, it's like, okay, it's not a secret anymore. So I guess if you tell one, you might as well tell 20.
That's right.
Because secrets only brew as long as they're alone.
Yes.
Okay.
And it was also a good, it was a very good lesson in discernment of, like, it is 100% okay and good to be vulnerable, and you don't need to be that way with everybody.
Hence our love of Brené Brown.
Hence our love of Brené Brown and Glennon Doyle Melton.
So amazing that you just decided, like, okay, now with these next few steps and with some language on this and with some vulnerability with the right people, I'm just going to go ahead and make a little turn here.
And start to be honest.
Yep.
And
so is that why you decided to be a part of PPSM?
No, that all came later.
After graduate school.
Later. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I still experienced the level and intensity of the intrusive thoughts and the anxiety, but I started to become just more aware of what I was experiencing and being more honest, which was just taking that layer of, I still experienced shame, but it wasn't to the intense level that it was at because I wasn't holding everything as a secret anymore.
Yeah.
So
did you find it more helpful to stop thought on your intrusive thoughts or to, like, fully feel the depth of them and let them take their whole course? I mean, this is obviously very personal. It's not every, it's not going to work for everyone who's experiencing postpartum depression, but I mean, did you find more relief in just cutting the thought off or letting it play out?
I needed to find meaning behind what was going on for me. And I knew that there was, I just obviously couldn't see it. And I needed to know that they were there for a reason. And what I found out the reason was that why they were there was for protection. And that I had such a strong sense of I have to protect her that my mind went to the worst thing that could possibly happen so I could cope ahead.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that was a huge, huge realization and a turning point of just acceptance of, like, that's what is happening for me right now.
It's hypervigilance, into the future.
Yes.
Okay.
So once I started to create meaning and understand what was happening with me, not just on like a mental level, but like a spiritual level, right? Like just on a level that I couldn't just do a skill for me personally. I couldn't just do a skill and have it be over. Like, I had to do a skill.
Attach it to purpose.
Attach it to purpose. And then, yes, exactly.
Totally.
To be able to work all of that through.
Yeah. Welcome to all of our lives.
Yeah.
You know, us achiever type, performance driven, anxiety control freaks.
Yeah.
Hey, it's like a club here
like
in the room.
It's like a club.
Hey.
Oh, my God.
Hey, solidarity.
I love it.
So
sisterhood's huge.
By the time you finished graduate school, did you use a lot of this to inform what you would do as a marriage and family therapist? Or were you like, let's just not ever go back there?
Both. I couldn't go back there because at any time I tried, I didn't have I didn't have my own layer of protection. I didn't have my own boundaries with other people's stories yet. And so, like,
oh yeah, every therapist's lifelong skill building. Yes. Yeah, right.
Yes.
Where do you leave their story at the door and move on to the next?
Exactly. So it took me about a year and really discontinuing breastfeeding at that point, which was about 9 months, and just some chill time.
Yeah.
Where I had graduated and things were slowing down a little bit. For me to be able to reorient into what I wanted to do.
Sure. So you were like, for all of my first cases, give me boys and men who will never talk to me about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah, it was.
You're like, eventually I'll open the door to being, you know, sort of a therapist that talks about motherhood and transitions and empowerment.
Yes. Well, I decided that I wanted. I don't know. I didn't decide. I maybe on a subconscious level. I don't know. But I decided that going into working with eating disorders at that time was then, you know, the next right step, which it was not. For my own personal journey, professional growth, it absolutely was. And I guess personal growth it was too, but it was another very painful experience. I don't have an eating disorder, but I really resonated with the clients in terms of just relationship with food and with body and what that meant for me and what that meant on a larger level.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a whole nother identity thing that happened right after another fragile identity shift.
Right.
So I maybe could have used a little bit more like, let's go talk to one track mind dudes. And that maybe would
or maybe not. I have no idea.
I don't know.
I mean, I think we all get certain seasons and certain trials and certain things put into our life all to narrate the.
That's right.
You know, it's all for the story. It's all to, you know, get to this point in the end game. What skill will you have that's just one skill sharper with your son who's coming compared to, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, as long as we're always a little bit better tomorrow.
That's right. That's right. And I think the experience with working with eating disorders was I started to really understand what empowerment, not just for myself, but how to be with clients in that empowerment struggle.
Right.
And that was really crucial for the next step to work with moms and with families. As they are in pregnancy or even preconception, but in pregnancy and postpartum at that point. So I think I needed that foundation just a different setting and then brought that to the work I do now.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the work you do now.
Yeah. So I work a lot with pregnant and postpartum moms and families. At Ellie, we created an in-home maternal mental health program where we provide psychotherapy to moms in their homes or in their community. As long as we have a private space to do it, we can do it. And really what I wanted to do with this program is, number one, reduce shame and stigma that and normalize the experience of motherhood. And number two, reduce any barriers that moms and families have that make it so they can't receive the care that they need.
Sure.
So when the in-home program was developed, it just turned into a second baby. I suppose the one I'm pregnant with now is my third. My second baby is this in-home maternal mental health program, and I feel just as protective and passionate about it as I do my own children.
But how do you find these women? I mean, who would have ever found you?
That's the hard part. That's why I joined PPSM.
Yeah.
Because I knew I was also going to have an in the community that I wasn't going to be able to have otherwise.
Yeah.
And so it all blended together really at the, it was very serendipitous. Smart. It wasn't even really a planned thing. It just happened, and it happened to be just a perfect blend. So I'm program director, but then I also see clients in office, and we do a lot of the deconstructing and constructing of the motherhood identity and what that all means. And again, creating meaning and purpose of out of their experience, even though it's a struggle. And with PPSM, doing a lot of work around normalizing the experience and saying, hey, these services are out there. Yes, the first step is always hard. And once you make it, you'll do it and you'll continue to move through.
Yes.
And it won't last forever.
Right.
And to know that you're not alone. So,
but even if something does last forever,
yes, right,
finding meaning and purpose
absolutely
in it changes the whole game.
The whole game.
You know, and especially for mothers, there's this deeply rooted benevolence of, you know, I would suffer that forever if it made that generation, that next generation better. If the purpose of my life or falling on the sword or anything I have to go through makes your life better than mine, I will do it.
Absolutely.
Do you find that with most moms, even if they're experiencing depression, anxiety, is the common thread just sacrifice? Or not always?
Yes, not always, but yes. I mean, I would say, you know, there's this whole thing in I guess, mental health or self-care, right? Of like, put yourself first, you know, make yourself the priority. And I think that while that's incredibly important and a really good point, it's not what comes natural to someone who grew, birthed, and nourished a human being. It's not instinctual. That's not the primitive way of being. The primitive way of being when you are a mother is to put your child first because they are more vulnerable than you.
Right.
And it is your, again, kind of an inherent duty. I'm not saying this is a should. I'm saying like this is just what happens internally, that there's an inherent duty to put them first.
Right. Right. And by goodness, if anyone understands vulnerability, we understand it.
Right.
So then we project that on this tiny person and think, well, I would do anything for you.
Anything.
Yeah.
Anything. I would do anything for you. And I would absolutely say that that is true, even if it is covered up by something that doesn't seem that way.
Right.
And a lot of the reason why it gets covered up is fear.
Right.
And trauma.
And circumstances really push people to their limits, right?
Definitely.
They don't know how to cope too well anymore. And while they would deeply protect their child, they've just simply lost the skills to do so.
Right.
You know, or brain chemistry makes it so difficult to even see that child as a vulnerable person anymore.
Right.
Instead, exactly. It's an enemy or it's a, you know, it's a barrier. Interesting.
Absolutely. But I do think it underpins, it has to, right? I mean, again, just primitively, this is how we're wired
right.
to be.
Right.
And it's hard to explain that to people or to anybody that's in your tribe of what's happening for you. Of like, I would do anything, yet I'm not well. And
therefore, I'm not sure how to.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I do a lot of work that does, I guess, is born out of my own experience. But again, holding that line of like, this is your story and this is your moment and this is your journey. And my role is to support that and to give you kind of a cushy place to do that. But it's not to tell you what to do. It's not to make your story mine or
right.
give you advice even. So, because I really feel like you have to make your own meaning, your own purpose, and you have to find that. And sometimes that is just a very painful struggle and long takes longer than what you'd like.
Yeah.
But if you have a person that can understand where you're at and hold that space for you, I think it just makes it a little easier.
Oh, agreed. There's something so sacred about not even like sage advice, like push that down the list and just let's talk about the power of breathing the same air as someone. It's about presence where it's like, find your purpose and meaning. And the whole time that you're looking for it, I will be by your side I won't be talking in your ear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, give skills and we talk about those things.
Of course.
Like,
okay, it's what we're trained to do.
Just manage life. And so you do have to kind of couple that or support both of those things, because if you just go right into purpose and meaning without any skill to be able to get there,
yeah,
you know, sweet mama is just going to feel very confused. And
right. You're creating philosophers who haven't even learned the alphabet.
Right.
You totally get it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's both.
So let me take our last minute to ask you this question. I don't know if it was postpartum or in launching yourself professionally, but if there was a time in your life where you would say you hit rock bottom, mm-hmm. kind of grab a mental image of that quick.
Mm-hmm.
When you looked around mm-hmm. and there was nothing else really for you, mm-hmm. what was left?
Oh, the bathroom floor moment. And I call that because in every self-help book, when people talk about their rock bottom moment, they're always on the bathroom floor and they talk about how cold the subway tile is, like every time.
Funny.
So I call it a bathroom floor moment. For me, I think it is knowing, and I'm not an ultra religious person, but for some reason, this particular statement of faith really resonates with me, and it's gotten me through pretty much anything else. And that is that God would never give me anything I couldn't handle. And so even though it's hard and I'm might be on the bathroom floor or whatever floor I choose to be on, crying and on my knees and begging for some sort of relief, that at the end of the day, God would never, ever, ever give me something I couldn't handle. And so I just have to keep going and figure out what that is.
Right. Or he'll throw so many things at you that you can't handle, but your temptation will never be great enough.
Right.
That the spirit can intercede.
Right.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing?
Amazing.
Like, we're such holistic, just powerful people in our physical capacity, in our psyche, in our spiritual connection. It's like, how can we ever fragment a person and their experience? Like, we have no idea.
You can't.
These holistic creatures walking amongst us. And
you can't.
I know, it's powerful.
And the concept of that is overwhelming in and of itself.
Yeah, so I'm going to put you into labor 34 weeks in one day.
Oh my God, please.
At least you surpassed Daisy now.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, many blessings to
the
baby boy who's coming.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you were here today. You
me
just
too.
Your mind and your honesty are so refreshing. And I think people just need more of that. They just need more Daniel Cotter.
They just need more Becca. Let's be real. We do this every time. We just love
on
each other.
I know.
It's so
Thank
good.
You so much.
Thank you.
The 2 Emerge podcast is brought to you by Emerge Mothers Academy. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave us a positive review. A special thanks to our media manager, Laurel Goulson, and to Jessica Manning for our music.